A Brexit bombshell and a massive setback for the Conservative government. Yesterday, the High Court in London ruled the Prime Minister does not have the power to trigger the official process of leaving the EU. The government hit back straight away. They've said they're going to appeal against that decision. It'll go to the Supreme Court. So what was this ruling yesterday? Well, judges say the government must get permission from Parliament before invoking Article 50. That's the technical term for what has to be done before we wave goodbye to the EU. Now, Theresa May believes the referendum and existing ministerial powers means MPs do not need to vote, but campaigners have called this unconstitutional. Brexit is probably one of the biggest stories for a generation. Seems there are a lot more twists and turns still to come. The DUP MP Gregory Campbell with us today. Good morning to you, Gregory.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. And the Sinn Féin MLA, John O'Dowd. John, morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, Gregory, this is a spanner in the works, isn't it?
Well, I don't know about a spanner in the works, Stephen. It certainly complicates matters. And I've heard quite a few people talk about the, you know, supremacy of Parliament, and no one should usurp the wish of the democratically expressed views of elected parliamentarians. And in the normal course of events, that's right. I think we should uphold the freedom and the sovereignty of Parliament. But the one thing that trumps the will of Parliament is the will of the people, and the people have decided. Now, it depends what is going to happen. The Labour Party appear to be saying now they're not going to try and delay or prevent Article 50 being triggered. So we've got to see what that actually means. We have to obviously await the outcome of the Supreme Court ruling. There's a lot to play for yet.
Yeah, but if this decision does stay where it is and the Supreme Court don't overturn it, there's a bigger question here, isn't there? That when an MP like yourself goes into Parliament and votes, and other MPs, it's not difficult for you because you have said that you want the country to leave Europe. But the majority of MPs in the UK want the country to stay in Europe. Now, when they go as individuals to vote, surely what they should be doing as an MP, Gregory, is voting for what they believe in rather than voting to represent a referendum that they don't believe in, a referendum result that they don't believe in.
Oh, well, what I think most MPs will do, and certainly I hope that they will do, is they will say to themselves and to others, look, the referendum verdict has been given. There's no point in rewriting or rerunning it. It has been given. Whatever my individual views are on that referendum, the people have spoken.
But when an MP votes, the value and integrity of that vote is what the MP believes in. It's their vote. It's what they believe in, is it not?
Yes, it is. But in this instance, what MPs are being asked to do is either to say the people have spoken, but we, the MPs, we know better. Now, that's a very dangerous route to go down.
That is precisely what the DUP does when it uses a petition of concern to block the majority vote, for example, on gay marriage. Your party says, we know better. So there's a contradiction here.
I don't know how a petition of concern on gay marriage comes into the...
Here's how it comes into it, because you're saying it's the will of the people, and yet your party has said, no matter what happens, no matter what the majority is in Northern Ireland, your party knows better on that issue. Is that not a similar... Is there not a contradiction, therefore, in what you're saying here?
No, there's not. Look, we had a referendum that was open to every person eligible and registered to vote on the 23rd of June. 17.4 million people decided that they wanted to leave the European Union. They wanted the United Kingdom to leave the European Union. And remember, before we go down the route of regionalisation, the question in the ballot paper was, do you wish the United Kingdom to remain or to leave? And the majority of people who voted to leave. Now, MPs have a duty to ensure that the voice of the people is implemented. It is as simple as that.
John O'Dowd?
Well, yesterday's court ruling is interesting in many ways, but I think the reaction to it also is very interesting. When you look at some of the English tabloid newspapers this morning, and some of the other broadsheets, I have to say some of the commentary, even from an observer's point of view, is quite shocking. Gregory talks about the will of the people. Is it the will of the people? Or are we going to now to be ruled by those who run large corporations and those who run newspapers? Now, from our point of view, it's quite clear that Westminster is going to vote through Brexit. We here locally voted against Brexit. We want to see the rights and entitlements of citizens here protected. We want to see the rights and entitlements of citizens on these on this island protected, because without doubt, Brexit is going to have the biggest impact on the people on the island of Ireland, both in terms of the economy, social, culturally, and many other aspects of our life. And our focus is on the role of the Assembly, on the role of Leinster House, on the role of politicians here, and how we ensure that our rights and entitlements are protected.
So you're not going to respect the result of the referendum?
Well, we are respecting the result. There's 56% of people here voted to remain. We are.
But that wasn't, as Gregory said, the referendum question.
Well, the referendum question was put to people here, and people returned a vote. A quite significant majority of people here voted to remain. It's quite clear that across the island of Ireland, people want to remain within the European Union. The European Union has many, many flaws, I accept that, but it has also been hugely beneficial to the peace process, to the modernisation of the island of Ireland, and ensuring that we have access to many, many different services, protections and legal rights than we wouldn't have in the absence of it. So we're very, very clear that we're going out there to protect our rights and entitlements. Westminster will do what Westminster is going to do, but we believe that the Assembly, that Leinster House, have a vital role to play in terms of the next stages of what has become known as Brexit.
Gregory?
Well, you see, Stephen, what people of a particular vantage will remember is that way back whenever the UK and indeed the Irish Republic entered what was then the EEC, there wasn't a vote of the people to go in to the EEC. There was a decision by Parliament, and of course Edward Heath was the Prime Minister at the time, and of course a very convinced Europhile. So he decided and Parliament agreed that the UK should join the EEC. And then it was only after we were in for a year or two that the pressure came on and they decided then to allow the people, imagine that, allowing the people to have a vote. And of course people voted to stay having just joined. So there is a feeling amongst many people that the European project, that corrupt elite, that bureaucratic elite that has ruled us for 40 years with restrictions and bureaucracy and corruption at its heart, that is refusing to let go. And of course, we know why. Because there's almost £10 billion sterling goes into their coffers every year from the Treasury. And they don't want others to follow suit. So that's why Jean-Claude Juncker and others are getting so uptight and so angry and so annoyed at a negotiating position that might extract a really good deal for the UK that would be freed up, and for Northern Ireland, that would be freed up from this bureaucracy and would allow us to flourish outside the EU as an independent sovereign state.
John?
Well, you know, these arguments have been made time and time again. It's what happens next is the most important thing. And it's worth noting it wasn't the European Commission, it wasn't the European Parliament, or indeed the European Court of Justice that made a ruling yesterday. It was the second highest court in Britain, which made a ruling that Britain has to use its constitutional arrangements to exit itself from the European Union. Now, you know, many argued, who argued for Brexit, that they wanted to bring power back to Westminster, that they wanted British laws made by British people. Well, three British judges yesterday sat and made a ruling that Westminster has to be included as it's part of the constitutional arrangements, and that the proper processes have to be used in Britain exiting itself from Europe. Now, those who support Brexit have to support that ruling yesterday, because it's the logic of their own argument. From my point of view, from our point of view, what's important to us is what's happened next in terms of the Assembly, what the politicians and the people in this part of the world, what their rights and entitlements, how they're going to be protected.
Well, if it really is...
economic well-being is going to be protected going into the future.
If it really is, John O'Dowd, the doomsday scenario that you suggest, if we do leave the EU, then you could put that above anything else and get in to Parliament and use your vote that you could implement if you took your seat.
The simple answer to that, Stephen, is we will not be ending our extensionist policy in relation to Westminster.
So it's not that important then?
No, the real authority lies here on the island of Ireland.
But it's not that important then, John. If you're saying leaving Europe is one of the biggest dangers to this country, and that is your party's position, isn't it? Then why would you not set that policy aside for this alone and get in there and, as a point of principle, use your vote?
Well, the votes will matter on this is in two institutions on the island of Ireland. In the Assembly, and there's still ongoing legal deliberations in relation to whether the Assembly should have a legislative consent motion. But as equally as important, what happens in the Dáil? Because do you see any agreement that is eventually reached between Britain and the European Union? It's going to have to be ratified by all European parliaments, including the Dáil. And if a deal comes forward which damages the rights and entitlements of citizens across this island, it can and should be vetoed in the Dáil. And we have representation there, we have a very strong voice there, and we will use our political ability and our political authority across the island of Ireland to lobby other political parties in the Dáil and elsewhere to veto any deal that comes forward which damages the rights and entitlements of citizens across this island.
How are you going to counteract that, Gregory?
Well, I don't know that, looking across the other 27 nation states, that they're all going to stand on ceremony, particularly when the key states are France and Germany. And we all know that Hollande and Merkel are the people who essentially will call the shots in the EU. They are the two kingpins in terms of the EU. Now, Germany leans upon an awful lot of trade and commerce to the United Kingdom because of the number, for example, of Prestige and other vehicles they sell to the UK. They do a massive amount of business into the UK. There is no way that German industry will want the German leader to stand on ceremony and cost them not just billions of pounds, but tens of thousands of jobs. That simply isn't going to happen. So everybody in Europe knows that this is a two-way deal. It is not a one-way street. It is a two-way deal that has to benefit both. Now, Theresa May can use that to her advantage, and I think it's irresponsible of some political leaders, and I saw some of them on last night on Question Time, indicating that she should reveal her hand and allow the EU then a better negotiating position in the post-article.
What she would be doing is revealing to the British public, revealing to the people, as you say, who should have the ultimate say, what actually is going to happen to our lives.
Right. And do you think that would be a good idea to reveal her hand like that to the British people and then allow Messrs. Hollande and Merkel to say, well, that's good, that's very interesting to know. We now know what the starting position of the UK is. We now know what is on their list of priorities. We now know that there's a price they're going to have to pay for it.
Why but people voted to leave,
why
Gregory.
Don't you give away your major hand? And
but here's your difficulty. People voted to leave in that one question in the referendum. They haven't been given an opportunity to vote on the terms on which they are leaving. They haven't been given an opportunity to vote on that. So why are the people of this country not entitled to know what those terms will be? In other words, how it's going to affect their lives?
And I'm sure they will be in the fullness of time. It'll not be in the next few weeks, but they will be.
Well, then that's where we come to a bigger question, isn't it? Do you think Parliament should have the final say on the terms of the final Brexit deal that's going to be negotiated over the next 2 years? So let's say we're not told now, and Theresa May goes off and she does all of that negotiating, essentially in secret, insofar as she doesn't tell the public, right? And I get your argument that that would weaken the negotiating hand. So once that deal is then on the table, should that go to a vote in Parliament?
Well, I think Parliament should be able, and I would imagine will be able to discuss the unfolding terms and conditions. Because remember,
but should it go to a vote is the key part of the question.
Hold on, Stephen. At some point next year, notwithstanding the Supreme Court's ruling, at some point next year, Article 50 will be triggered. And then negotiations will begin. nobody seriously believes that those negotiations will be conducted entirely secretly and without any information coming out. Of course it won't. It will be discussed widely. It will be discussed in Parliament.
But I think it's a really interesting question. The final terms of that deal, should that go to a vote in Parliament?
Well, I would be supportive and content of it going to Parliament. What I would not be content with, and I think it would be a dereliction of duty on the part of MPs, who would say not only should it go to Parliament, but that Parliament should could have the capacity to decide to thwart the will of the people. That must not be allowed to happen.
What assurance can you give this morning? What leverage has the DUP got this morning, Gregory Campbell, that Northern Ireland's going to get a good deal out of this, in this negotiation now with Europe? DUP got?
8 more votes in Parliament than Sinn Féin have decided to deploy.
Is that it? But the government already knows what way you're going to vote, so that's not leverage.
Well, it's leverage because I've indicated to you...
So you've shown your hand publicly.
No. At some point next year, the negotiations will begin post-Article 50. At that point, we will begin to see the nature of the discussions. We've played a full part. Sammy Olson was part of the Brexit Committee last week. You saw Nigel Dodds pressing and asking a question of the Prime Minister and getting a very positive response. The leverage is continuing to pay
but
off.
But what leverage have we got? Why should they care about Northern Ireland as opposed to anywhere else in the UK? What leverage has the DUP got? Because Theresa May knows how you're going to vote, so she doesn't need to worry about you. What leverage have you got?
I would have thought that the DUP are the last party you should be putting that question to. Because and there's a whole range of votes in this Parliament, unless Theresa May actually triggers a general election, on a whole range of votes, the decision and the outcome of whatever it might be that Theresa May puts forward in Parliament could well be decided by a handful of votes. And we have 8 votes more than anyone else from in the UK that are in the game in terms of changing the outcome.
And are you putting it up to Theresa May? Is that what you're saying to her? If she wants your longer-term support, she better deliver what? Like, what are you asking for Northern Ireland?
No, Stephen, we're not putting it up to anyone. What we've said publicly and privately to Theresa May, to the Secretary of State and to others, is, look, we represent many people in Northern Ireland, and what we want to get is the best possible deal so that the opportunities that Brexit offers are maximised, and whatever potential downsides there are, that we minimise them in terms of cross-border trade. And that's our bottom line. Get that best deal. Now, Theresa May, from what all she has said since she has become Prime Minister, she gets that. Now, what we need to make sure is not only that she gets it, but that she delivers on it. That's what we have to do.
John?
Well, I think there's a number of interesting points arise in that. I mean, you look at the debate that's currently going on in Britain and the areas of major concern, both to the government and to others. There's two areas of major concern in the business world. One is car manufacturing, and we do not manufacture cars here. And it's interesting that a Brazilian-born French businessman who heads up a Japanese car company appears to have got a better deal thus far out of Theresa May than any political party in Britain or any other British leader in Britain has managed to achieve thus far. So it sort of makes a mockery of Brexit. Also, the other major area of concern for commentators and the government has been financial services. We do not have a major player. We're not a major player in financial services yet. But there's the two major areas of debate that's going on in Britain, where the debate and the deals are being struck, are areas that not impact directly on our economy. What does directly impact on our economy? Agriculture, agri-food. And they haven't been mentioned. They haven't been mentioned in the debate.
Well, presumably Martin McGuinness and Arlene Foster are mentioning
them. There's questions on Wednesday by a DUP MP to the Prime Minister.
The reason they haven't...
And got a positive response. Because we were there.
The reason why they haven't mentioned a major part of the debate is because they're not major...
John, parts. You've just gone off phone.
Sorry, can you hear me?
There we go.
Now?
Yes, we can.
Right. The reason that they're not featuring in Britain is because they're not major parts of the British economy, whereas they are here. So the focus is going to be what impacts upon, largely upon England and Wales, what impacts upon the constituencies of the majority of Conservative and Labour MPs, and what impacts on their economy. And we will be sidelined by that debate if we do not step up to the mark and ensure that we respect the 56% of people who voted here. And why was there a bigger vote here to stay in the European Union? Because those areas of the European Union, which are supported by the European Union in terms of agriculture, in terms of agri-food, in terms of community sector, in terms of the peace process, have little or no relevance in Britain, but they have a major relevance here, and people here see the benefits of membership.
But you're rehearsing the referendum again. Get over it. The result, has been given.
Where the disparities lie in terms of what is important in England and Wales, what drives their economy, what drives their political thinking,
Paddy,
what drives the economy here, and what drives political thinking here.
John, Paddy in Belfast wants to speak to you. Go ahead, Paddy.
Listen, John. You and your party have sold the Republicans in Ireland out to yourself. I was an attorney, so I was way back. Sinn Féin were always opposed to joining the EU then. What has changed? It's like today, what has changed for you that you are agreeing with three High Court judges sitting in England? Where's the justice for us? Where's the justice for the people, Republicans? I voted for Brexit to get the hell out of there. So because I want to see them putting the borders back up. So as we do what we do best, get back to war.
Well, John O'Dowd, you want to respond to that?
Well, that's Paddy's point of view. But I suspect when he says get back to war, he means somebody else. He means somebody else's children. So somebody else will do the jail time. Somebody else will carry their sons and daughters to the graveyard. I'm arguing against that. And I stand firmly on that ground that I'm arguing against that. I believe there is a peaceful and democratic way to achieve all our objectives. In relation to our position on the EU, over many years of debate at Sinn Féin Ardeisna, we changed our position in relation to the EU. And the EU changed over the decades that it has been in place. And I said during my commentary, including in this programme, that there are many, many difficulties, and we have many, many difficulties with the EU, but we believe that being membership of the EU brings more benefits to the island of Ireland than leaving it. So that's our position. It was democratically debated, discussed, and we changed over the years, as the EU changed over the years.
Those agricultural payments and that whole agricultural sector, Gregory Campbell, what assurances have you got so far that Northern Ireland's going to be protected?
Well, I think the first thing is, John O'Dowd does paint a bit of a caricature of the agri-food sector, for example. It's not accurate to say that in the rest of the United Kingdom there isn't the same degree of emphasis on the agri-food business and on the agricultural economy. Of course there is. In large parts of Scotland and Wales and even in Middle England, there is huge emphasis on agriculture, admittedly not in the large cities. But there are many MPs whose constituents are in farming in large parts of the UK, and Northern Ireland's part of that. So the farming will pose a huge part of the negotiations. And, you know, what we need to do now, I mean, and back of all of this, Stephen, and what we haven't mentioned, is that Theresa May decide, as a result of the outcome of this, whenever next month or January, whenever the Supreme Court have finally given their verdict, she might decide that this is all, it's not worth going through with all of this. And she might decide, look, I'm going to table something before Parliament. If it's not passed, a general election in 4 weeks.
Would you welcome that? Decide.
Well, I wouldn't run away from it. Would not run away from it. Now,
do you think it would be the best way forward?
Well, it could be.
Well, of course it could be. You know, I could be 10 stone.
Let me finish my answer. It could be the only way forward if the alternative is to get bogged down into a further appeals and then some sort of bill going to the House of Commons, which may or may not be delayed by the House of Lords. She may decide that it's more
It's more simple, more straightforward, and strategically more important, because remember, the Conservatives at the moment are faced with a Labour Party to the left that is still in civil war in terms of its leadership and its MPs, and to its right, a UKIP that appears to be imploding. They may decide that this is an opportunity to clear the air, not just nationally, but within the Conservative Party as well.
Here's what you
whatever degree of problems they may have as well, they pale into in comparison.
Here's what you,
the problems faced with the Labour Party.
Here's, Gregory, what your party is putting at risk. If you listen to Martin McGuinness, he has said, our Deputy First Minister has said, that this is a bigger issue than the peace process. Now, what's your reaction to that?
Well, I mean, you listen to Martin McGuinness say a number of things. You know, he said that he didn't trust the Secretary of State. He said, now, I think this week, he didn't trust MPs in the House of Commons. So, you know, I don't know, does he trust himself? You know, that's a matter for him. He's made his comments.
Bigger than the peace process, Gregory.
Well, you know, he can say what he wants to say, and he has said that.
And what's your reaction to that? Because it's important, isn't it? We know how important the peace process is in Northern Ireland. Martin McGuinness has been a key player in that, and he's now saying this is a bigger issue potentially than that.
Right.
Should we not be frightened?
Well, he has said that, and remember, I think it was about a year or 18 months ago, he said that he was prepared to lay down his life for the peace process. So I don't know how you square those two things. But, you know, that's a matter for him. The problem...
John O'Dowd, well, let me just clarify. John, how is it bigger than the peace process?
Well, I'm not sure exactly which comments you're referring to from Martin. Martin made a number of comments over this last number of days in relation to the scale of Brexit. The scale and the implications of Brexit are huge and are very, very challenging and are comparable to or on the scale of the negotiations in around the peace process. The implications of what we're facing, Stephen, are unknown in terms of the economic, social and cultural damage that is potentially going to be heaped upon us in not only the years to come, but the decades to come. And you refer to there could possibly be a Westminster election. That's possible. The only thing we know for sure going into the future is that anything could happen. We're in such uncharted waters, territory that nobody's ever been in before, a political and constitutional crisis in many ways. Gregory refers to the ongoing, as he refers to, civil war within the Labour Party. There's quite clearly continuing civil war going on within the Conservative Party. There are huge disagreements among the Conservative cabinet on the direction of travel. So where are we going to end up? Nobody knows.
I'll read to you exactly what Martin McGuinness said. He's described the UK's decision to leave the EU as the major crisis of our time. Here's what he said. I've been involved in some of the most historic and important negotiations that this island has seen in 100 years, more particularly the Good Friday Agreement and the St Andrews Agreement. What we are facing into now, in my opinion, is just as big as that, maybe even bigger, he says.
Well, he's talking about the scale of the negotiations, the implications of those negotiations, the constitutional matters in around those negotiations, all of that. This is, I don't think anybody has underestimated the scale of the challenge we face. We may disagree on how that challenge is overcome. I think everybody agrees it's a significant, major challenge ahead of us all.